Today, the Supreme Court hears a challenge to the government's case against Arthur Andersen. Prosecutors investigated and won a conviction against that accounting firm for the way that it audited the books at Enron. The result was that Andersen, one of the big five accounting firms, collapsed, shrinking from 28,000 employees to 200. Now the government's victory is in doubt. Here's NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
The story of Andersen's role in the Enron scandal is a tale of two tellings. As the government portrays the company, it was a knowing and willing accomplice to Enron's fraudulent practices. The accounting firm was already effectively on probation with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In June of 2001, it had agreed to pay a record $7 million fine to settle an SEC complaint over its auditing of another company. And as part of that settlement, Andersen was subject to having the SEC disbar its accountants for future bad conduct. Yet just 3 months later, faced with an unraveling Enron scandal, Andersen, according to the government, engaged in massive document destruction that the company knew might impede a, quote, highly probable investigation of Enron's conduct. Sam Buell, now a law professor at the University of Texas, was one of the prosecutors in the Andersen case.
The obstruction of justice, in some ways, looked like kind of the natural outgrowth of a firm that had really kind of lost sight of the idea that its first obligation was to the public, to the investors, and to the regulators who stood for the investors, namely the SEC.
Andersen tells a very different story. The company says its lawyer, Nancy Temple, sent out a memo reminding company employees to simply comply with the company's long-standing document retention and destruction policy. Andersen asserts that Temple's memo was not, as the government claims, a coded message to shred evidence, but was instead the routine kind of legal advice that lawyers give in a situation where a company faces potential investigation or litigation, but has not yet received any notification from regulators. Moreover, the company asserts, Enron was not only misleading the public and the government at that time, it was misleading its auditors at Andersen, too, so that Andersen did not know the full extent of Enron's problems. So routine are the practices that Andersen engaged in that the business community, including the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Chamber of Commerce, have filed briefs in this case urging the Supreme Court to reverse Andersen's conviction and, at minimum, order a new trial. Virginia Seitz wrote the brief for the Chamber of Commerce and the conservative Washington Legal Foundation.
This is the there but for the grace of God go I case, because every business knows that it's constantly destroying and making decisions to destroy or retain documents. Every business knows there's always a possibility that it could be under government investigation. And if it's a crime to destroy documents when there's a possibility of a government investigation, businesses are going to be afraid to implement those document policies, and they simply can't function without them.
Andersen was not, in fact, convicted of obstruction of justice, a charge that requires a showing that the defendant knew he was committing an illegal or wrongful act. Andersen was convicted of witness tampering, a charge that bars bribing, threatening, or corruptly persuading a witness. So the question in this case is, what is corruptly persuading, and does it require consciousness of wrongdoing? The trial judge instructed the jury that even if Andersen honestly and sincerely believed that its conduct was lawful, it still could be convicted of witness tampering if its actions were aimed at impeding an official investigation, regardless of whether that investigation had begun or not. Andersen counters that there is nothing illegal about purging files that might or might not be of assistance to the government in some future investigation, so the government should have been required to show consciousness of wrongdoing. The facts of the case are illustrative and something of a Rorschach test. As the government sees it, Andersen knew it was in trouble over the Enron audit. Its in-house lawyer, Nancy Temple, had concluded in an internal memorandum that an investigation was highly probable, and the company had set up an Enron crisis management team that conferred every day. Then Temple sent out her memo reminding the crisis group of the company's document retention policy, a policy that called for the destruction of any documents no longer needed for audits. And the crisis group, which had never been big on compliance with this policy before, suddenly started shredding with a vengeance. 2,400 pounds of paper were shredded in 3 days, compared to a previous average of 70 to 90 pounds. Indeed, the volume was so high that the on-site shredder couldn't do it all, and some materials had to be shipped to other locations for destruction. This despite the fact that more than one Anderson partner either refused to participate in the shredding or warned other partners not to shred anything that might be relevant to a future investigation. The shredding continued throughout October until November 9th, when Anderson was subpoenaed. Former prosecutor Sam Buell.
They really weren't prosecuted for following a routine practice that they'd been following for years and years. They were prosecuted for something that was akin to removing evidence from a crime scene just before the police gets there.
Virginia Seitz, representing the Chamber of Commerce, disagrees.
If the government thought that its case could show that, then the government should have been perfectly content with a jury instruction that said, everything that Anderson employees were doing demonstrated that they understood what they were doing was wrong, was a crime. But in fact, the jury was not instructed that way. The jury was instructed that even if they believed in good faith, that what they were doing was lawful, they committed a crime.
Anderson maintains that there is ample evidence that the auditor thought it was acting legally, since all of the conduct for which Anderson was indicted took place at a time when the SEC was not yet even conducting an investigation of Enron, much less Anderson, and there had been no request for information from Anderson. Apparently, even with the existing jury instruction, a finding of guilt wasn't all that easy. After a week of jury deliberations, the jury was deadlocked. And even after a special charge from the judge to re-examine their beliefs, urging compromise, it took the jurors 3 more days to reach a verdict. With the case now before the Supreme Court, both sides are pulling out all the stops. NYU law professor Stephen Gillers explains why the case is so important to the government.
The government cares mightily about this case because, as we've learned in the years since, there is a great deal of documentation that the government can use to prove corporate wrongdoing.
For lawyers, the case is particularly delicate, since their job is to advise clients on how to minimize their liabilities, and typically that means not helping the government when it's after someone. And then there's the precedent set by the Anderson prosecution, what some have called the execution of the company and its 28,000 jobs. Anderson says the case is not about being tough on corporate crime. It is about the right to conduct one's life and business in a manner understood to be lawful and to receive fair warning when that law is changed. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.